My job's pretty easy today. Our next speaker also is a gentleman who really needs no introduction. Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States under President Lyndon Johnson, and a great fighter for the preservation of our constitutional republic, is here with us, and I'd like to warmly welcome Ramsey Clark.
My baby sister came unexpectedly into town last night, and she's got to leave at 1. And she thinks I'm back there already. I said I'd be. So I'm going to speak very briefly. It's an important occasion, an important moment. The last thing I heard on the news was that one of our aircraft carriers is steaming toward the Gulf and the Arabian Sea to strike once again at Iraq, one of our favorite punching bags over the last 4 or 5 decades, a place that's been called the birthplace of civilization that's suffered more violence over a longer period of time at least since 1963, 73, 83, take your choice, than any other country. And it's now largely in ruins, and we'll add a few more. Coming up here in a taxi, because I knew I wouldn't have much time, I tried to think of our military aggressions since Vietnam. But before I get into those, I'll give a happy note. I visited both Korea and Vietnam twice last year. It was a decennial anniversary of the end of those two wars, 53 for Korea and 73 for Vietnam. And it's about the only optimistic thing I know of on the planet today, because Vietnam particularly is thriving. The people are happy, the streets are crowded. There may be 5 on a motorbike, but they love it. And they got plenty of food, and they've got no violence. The hospitals still have infants cruelly twisted, their bodies and limbs from Agent Orange. And we don't know how long. The smart guys who figured out Agent Orange didn't figure out how long it will be before you can purge it from a system where it's become widespread so that it doesn't destroy your children. But you can overcome and you can go forward, and 2 victims of our violence are powerful evidence to that fact on Earth today. The wars in Korea and Vietnam were singularly devastating, the worst since World War II. But there have been so many others since. Coming up in the cab, I started trying to list some of them. And after Vietnam, we've had it's a proxy war in some degree, but it was devastating for Nicaragua. It undermined their economy. It killed a lot of their people, destroyed a lot of their infrastructure, and we didn't destroy territory with Agent Orange as we did in Asia, but Nicaragua's free and independent, but it's poor. Iraq and Libya are both more devastated than at any other time in this century, and the past too, for that matter. Both were prosperous countries. In their areas, they were the most prosperous. Had good medical systems, good housing, good schools. And both lay in ruins. Libya's a little harder for us to imagine than Iraq, if you hear more about Iraq, but Libya hadn't known violence since the end of the Desert Campaign in late 1942, although they were still picking up landmines from the beaches from World War II, and there probably was still some there. That's the way we do it. But the standard of living was high. The level of education was high and strong, and they're both bombed back into the Stone Age, as we, some of our generals like to say. We ought to remember that phrase, bomb you back into the Stone Age. Happy New Year. Grenada's an interesting example. It's a peaceful little vacation island, lovely, lovely island. Had no war, had no capacity for war, really. And didn't have 110,000 people. And we invaded one day, scared a whole bunch of American kids who were students at a medical school on the beach there. I don't know how much medicine they were learning with the beach so close. But and we killed more people in Grenada than we lost in World War II in proportion to population, which is not a lot of people. I'll tell you this, there was nobody on Grenada that didn't know someone who got killed in that little incursion. And I hope you saw the major Hollywood motion picture that glorified our heroism in invading and clobbering Grenada. Unbelievable, with major stars. I don't remember who they were, but I don't go to see their movies anymore if I can remember them. Countries like Rwanda and Panama. We used artillery from our permanent bases along the canal there to rain fire in on the capital of Panama and hit the major, mayor's office and hit the major buildings and left the beaches a mess. And dragged bodies down on the beaches and used flamethrowers to ashen them and then wash them into the sea. So you can't tell how many people were killed. There was a general, I got there about 8 days after the invasion, and there was a general, major general, and he was the PR guy, and he said, 68 people have died. And I was walking down the street, and a priest came up one day and said, go to the cemetery. It's called Jardin de Paz, Garden of Peace. Because there, we don't know what it is, but he said, I jog around it every morning. And at the crack of dawn, these military trucks come in. They got canvas all over them. You can't see what's in them, but something's going on in there. So we drove over to the cemetery, and there are a bunch of kids that played in the front part of it, jumping over tombstones and stuff like that. We said, you seen trucks coming in here? And said, oh, yeah. I said, where are they going? So one of them got in the car with us and drove us back to some woods. There were three long trenches, about 60, 70 yards. I paced them off. and long and about 3 paces, 9 or 10 feet wide. Two of them were filled in completely, and one was half filled. And when they exhumed the bodies, there were about 500 bodies under there that we had taken. I don't think the families knew anything about what happened to them or who they were, you know. And there they were. The Panama was, a minor victim, though, compared to other countries. If you think of what Afghanistan has been through, and Sudan was interesting. We decided we didn't like Sudan for some reason, and one fine morning we launched it as if it were an athletic enterprise. We sent a couple of 1,000 miles missiles to the largest producing pharmaceutical plant in all of Africa, which is just outside the capital there, a modern plant, foreign-owned, obviously. And whammy, it was dust. And it was exporting free of charge, 20%, I'm sorry, of its product to countries in sub-Saharan Africa. It was a main source of more sophisticated pharmaceuticals that was available to them there. Why we chose that as a target, you can only imagine, but I'll tell you this. It's the type of target that people remember when they know about it, and the people in Khartoum sure know about it. The numbers of wars have been so great and so deadly, and we've so glorified the power of violence. We've spent so much of our ingenuity on more sophisticated ways of killing people on the cheap, at the minimum risk to ourselves. And it's been how many years since 1967 when Dr. Martin Luther King at the Riverside Church here said the greatest purveyor of violence on earth is my own government. And that violence is the ultimate human degradation. Other animals don't kill themselves in masses like that, you know. It's hard enough for them to get enough food without worrying about going off and just random slaughter of their own species. But we spend a lot of money and a lot of ingenuity at it. And certainly as much as was true in 1937 and 67, we're the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. I think I said the last thing I heard on the radio this morning was an aircraft carrier steaming toward the Gulf, ready to add a few more licks, on the cradle of civilization, which hasn't known a moment of peace since our invasion in January of 1991, really. They've been playing. You remember we had 115,000 aerial sorties over it in 4 months? I figured out how many that was every minute or something like that. It's a stunning number. It was there during the bombing, and the planes were there, American planes, over all the time. Remember one time we go on top of this hotel where we were having dinner in the dark because electricity was out. And there were some bombs that hit close by, so we ran up and we were on the Shatt al-Arab, which is where the Tigris and Euphrates come together and flow down to the Gulf. And Iran's just across the Shatt. And I don't know why they put it there, it was a big training hospital, a good hospital, a major hospital. I'd been in it before. On a little island, there are two bridges that go out to it, not, 20, 30 feet. And there's no electricity in the country, but there's certainly none in Basra. But there were emergency lights. There was lighting on in the emergency rooms where they had electric generators going. And we saw bombs going down the shot, hitting the water just toward the island, and then the lights went out in the hospital down there. No possible military threat to the United States in that area, and certainly not in that hospital or in the hotel that we were having supper in. We were the only guests there. The chef was so happy. He made rolls for us and stuff, cooking in the dark by Coleman lanterns or something. And here's Iraq all these years later. And now facing perhaps the heaviest violence that it's had so far. And our, as we've called it for a long time now, military-industrial complex being the greatest threat to life on the planet. And we live here. We have voices. We have hearts. We have minds. We have energy. And we have to rise up and say, no more. No more. We want our country to end violence in the world, not to be the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. We want to end our military preparations and manufacturing. And we want to see, before it's too late, peace on earth in which our precious little children can live healthy lives and grow up with healthy minds and bodies to live in peace and love each other. And with that, I got to go see my baby sister before she leaves. Thank you very much. Thank you.